Hello and welcome to An Engineer's Journey Through the Book of Mormon. We explore the Book of Mormon with the assumption that science worked the same then as it does now and that the characters are real people with the same types of feelings and tendencies as you and me today. The views and opinions expressed here are strictly those of the narrator and should not be considered official interpretations in any way. And now An Engineer's Journey Through the Book of Mormon. Hello, and welcome back. Our last video discussed the beginning of Ammon's mission to the Lamanites, and ended with Ammon's miraculous defense of the king's flocks. Today, in Alma 18 and 19, we'll find out what happened next. But first, we need to cover the trivia question from last time. In today's video, Ammon will teach Lamoni and his people, but there was a Lamanite living in Lamoni's household who had already been converted. So what was the name of Lamoni's servant who had already been converted? Chapter 19 introduces us to Abish, one of only four women in the Book of Mormon called out by name. Verse 16 says she was named Abish, she having been converted unto the Lord for many years on account of a remarkable vision of her father. So her name was Abish. And we'll talk more about her contribution to Ammon's success in just a few minutes. When King Lamoni heard the testimony of his servants and saw the pile of severed arms laid before him, he was astonished and wondered about this new servant who apparently had superhuman strength. The Nephites had a knack for winning battles where the odds were stacked against them, and they often embarrassed much larger Lamanite armies. And Lamoni knew that the Nephites credited these victories to a great spirit. So Lamoni wondered out loud to his servants, might Ammon actually be this great spirit? Verse 3, and they answered the king and said, whether he be the great spirit or a man, we know not. But this much we do know, that he cannot be slain by the enemies of the king. Neither can they scatter the king's flocks when he is with us, because of his expertness and great strength. Therefore, we know that he is a friend of the king, and now, O king, we do not believe that a man has such great power, for we know that he cannot be slain. Lamoni felt a twinge of guilt. Were it not for Ammon, the king's sheep would have been scattered, and he would have executed the servants who were now speaking to him. Verse 4, and now when the king had heard these words, he said unto them, now I know that it is the great spirit, and he has come down at this time to preserve your lives, that I might not slay you as I did your brethren. Now this is the great spirit of whom our fathers have spoken. The executing of servants who let the king's flocks be scattered was a long-standing Lamanite tradition, it seems, passed down to Lamoni by his fathers. He had never questioned it. But now, seeing that the Great Spirit himself had intervened to spare lives, Lamoni began to be afraid that killing his servants might have been wrong. And he also might have wondered if this Great Spirit had a further agenda. He might have even wondered if the Great Spirit planned to avenge the deaths of the earlier servants. So Lamoni asked, where is he? In response, a servant said that Ammon was feeding the king's horses. In all the commotion, Lamoni had forgotten about an invitation to a feast he had received from his father, who was king over all the Lamanite lands, but Ammon had not forgotten. Verse 10, now when King Lamoni heard that Ammon was preparing his horses and his chariots, he was more astonished because of the faithfulness of Ammon, saying, surely there has not been any servant among all my servants that has been as faithful as this man, for even he doth remember all my commandments to execute them. Although he wanted to talk to Ammon, Lamoni couldn't work up the courage to summon him. He may have wondered whether such a mighty warrior would want to remain his servant, or if he had plans to claim the throne, but Lamoni didn't have to wait in suspense for very long because Ammon stopped by to report that the horses and chariots were ready. But it says, he saw that the countenance of the king was changed. He started to leave, sensing that he had arrived at a bad time, but one of the king's servants said, "Rabbana, the king desireth thee to stay." The word Rabbana means powerful or great king. So Ammon knew that something was up. When Ammon asked the king what he should do next, Lamoni sat silent, not knowing what to say. After waiting for an hour, Ammon asked him again, but Lamoni remained speechless. To break this awkward silence, Ammon asked what, in my opinion, was a rather obvious question. Given the day's events, it was probably not difficult to guess what the king was thinking about. Verse 16, "Is it because thou hast heard that I defended thy servants and thy flocks, and slew seven of their brethren with the sling and with the sword, and smote off the arms of others in order to defend thy flocks and thy servants? Behold, is it this that causeth thy marvelings?" That much, at least, was obvious. But, being filled with the Holy Ghost, Ammon perceived that the king's real concern was whether Alma was the great spirit who helped the Nephites in battle. So he addressed the king's thoughts by clarifying that he was a normal man. "Behold, I am a man and am thy servant. Therefore, whatsoever thou desirest which is right, that will I do." Lamoni was even more astonished. As if superhuman combat skills were not enough, his new servant could also read minds. Lamoni could not contain himself any longer, and his pent-up questions all came out in a rush. And the king said, "How knowest thou the thoughts of my heart? Thou mayest speak boldly and tell me concerning these things, and also tell me by what power ye slew and smote off the arms of my brethren that scattered my flocks. And now, if thou wilt tell me concerning these things, whatsoever thou desirest, I will give unto thee. And if it were needed, I would guard thee with my armies. But I know that thou art more powerful than all they. Nevertheless, whatsoever thou desirest of me, I will grant it unto thee." Ammon had a simple request. "If I answer your questions, will you listen to me?" Lamoni agreed, and a gospel discussion began. After a basic discussion about the existence of a god, Ammon gave the king and his servants a history of the world as summarized by the brass plates. He began with the creation and continued it down to Lehi. It's possible, or perhaps even likely, that Ammon had seen or read the actual plates because his father, King Mosiah, was the keeper of the plates. Then he talked about Lehi's departure from Jerusalem and the rebellion of Laman, Lemuel, and the sons of Ishmael. Quote, "Yea, all their rebellions did he relate unto them." That information would have gone counter to the Lamanite tradition that Lamoni would have heard growing up. Lamoni would have been taught that Nephi deviously took authority from Laman, the rightful king, and had also stolen the brass plates, the sword of Laban, the Liahona, and other valuable things. Lastly, after correcting their history, Ammon discussed the plan of redemption and the coming of Christ. When he had finished speaking, he asked if Lamoni believed him. And he, referring to Lamoni, began to cry unto the Lord, saying, "O Lord, have mercy. According to thy abundant mercy which thou hast had upon the people of Nephi, have upon me and my people." And now when he said this, he fell to the earth as if he were dead. So convincing was this apparent death that the king's family mourned over him for 2 days, lamenting his loss after the manner of the Lamanites. And then we turn the page to chapter 19. For 2 days and nights, King Lamoni lay as if dead. His servants planned to lay his body in a sepulcher, but the queen was not convinced that he had actually died. Some of her servants complained that the king was beginning to stink and needed to be buried, but his wife had not noticed any smell. King Lamoni's servants told the queen about the king's new servant who was able to do mighty works. So she summoned Ammon and asked him to look at her husband and help her decide whether to bury him. Although everyone else was in mourning, Ammon secretly rejoiced. He knew Lamoni had not died. Instead, he knew the king had been filled with such joy that it had overcome his natural frame and he was carried away in God. And he said, "He is not dead, but he sleepeth in God, and on the morrow he shall rise again. Therefore, bury him not." I have to wonder if Ammon recognized the king's situation as being like that of his friend Alma, who had fallen to the ground and been unconscious for 3 days. Perhaps that's why he projected a 3-day recovery time. In fact, the text implies that Ammon had predicted a specific time at which the king would awaken. He asked the queen if she believed that the king would rise. She responded, "I have had no witness save thy word and the word of our servants. Nevertheless, I believe that it shall be according as thou hast said." Ammon was shocked by her reply. The Nephite tradition was that Lamanites were wild, hardened, and ferocious, as we read last time in Alma 17:14. But this queen was as teachable as a child. And Ammon said unto her, "Blessed art thou because of thy exceeding faith. I say unto thee, woman, there has not been such great faith among all the people of the Nephites." Sure enough, the next day, at the hour predicted by Ammon, Lamoni rose. He said to his wife, "Blessed be the name of God, and blessed art thou. For as sure as thou livest, behold, I have seen my Redeemer, and he shall come forth and be born of a woman, and he shall redeem all mankind who believe on his name." Having said this, both the king and queen fell to the earth overcome with the Spirit. Ammon dropped to his knees and poured out his heart in gratitude, and his joy was so overpowering that he fell unconscious as well. In the scene that followed, so many people fell unconscious to the ground that it makes me wonder whether Lamanites were naturally predisposed to this kind of reaction to the Spirit. After Ammon, the next to fall were the servants. When they saw that the king, queen, and Ammon had all fallen, they became very afraid. They had been the ones to tell Lamoni about Ammon's power. Maybe they might be blamed for the king and queen lying on the ground. Verse 16 says, "They did call upon the name of the Lord in their might, and one by one they also collapsed and became senseless." Eventually, only one person in the room was left standing. This was the queen's servant named Abish, who we met in the trivia question. Abish had converted unto the Lord several years earlier when her father had a vision. Before proceeding, let me say that the Lamanites we're meeting here seem very different from the bloodthirsty savages envisioned by the Nephites. Lamoni had a loving relationship with his wife. His wife was very humble and was willing to learn. Abish's father had seen a godly vision. Despite their many misguided traditions, such as the king's tendency to execute his servants or his subjects' tendency to steal from each other, the Lamanite nation was full of humble, teachable people. It was primarily their inherited traditions that were corrupt. Many among the Lamanites were good, sincere people who only lacked a knowledge of the truth. Perhaps the joy of this realization is part of what overcame Ammon. Abish considered the bodies lying senseless on the floor to be evidence of a miracle. She had secretly been a follower of Christ for a long time and recognized an opportunity to showcase God's power to others. So she excitedly ran forth from house to house, making it known unto the people. The people she notified quickly ran to the king's house. A large crowd began to gather at the king's house. When the crowd arrived, they saw the king, the queen, and all the servants laying prostrate on the ground as though they were dead. And Abish wasn't there to explain the situation. She was still out gathering more people, so they assumed that something evil had happened. They saw a Nephite laying there among the fallen bodies and wondered whether the Nephite Ammon might be to blame. The crowd didn't know what to think. Some suggested that Lamoni had been asking for trouble by inviting a Nephite into his home. Others, maybe the families of the servants that Lamoni had slain, said that Lamoni had brought a curse upon him by slaying shepherds whose sheep had been scattered. Also, among the same crowd and probably wearing bandages over their missing sword arms, were several of the men who had scattered the king's sheep. They were angry with Ammon because of the number which he had slain of their brethren at the waters of Sebus while defending the flocks of the king. It's surprising to me that all these people knew each other and lived in close proximity to each other. The Lamanites who scattered the sheep were probably known not only by those in their community, but also by the king. In Alma 18:20, Lamoni referred to the men who had been scattering his flocks as "my brethren that scattered my flocks." What a strange tradition to execute your servants when you know who the culprits are. It also explains why the thieves kept stealing the flocks. There was no consequence for them. Instead, when they stole a king's sheep, the king killed the servants. But the people didn't just know who the robbers were. They also knew who the leaders of the gang were. And the gang members lived near enough to the king that Abish rounded them up along with everyone else. Ammon had slain the group's leader with the sword, but his brother was still alive, and he was angry with Ammon. And seeing that he finally had an opportunity to avenge his brother and his friends, he drew his sword and walked, apparently unhindered by the gathered crowd, toward the body laying prostrate on the ground. And as he lifted the sword to smite him, behold, he fell dead. Our narrator pauses to explain why this would-be murderer had fallen dead. And we addressed this last time. Prior to Ammon leaving Zarahemla with his brethren, King Mosiah had approached the Lord in prayer, asking whether his sons should preach to the Lamanites. In response, Mosiah was told to let them go, that they would be protected and bring many souls to Christ. But especially interesting is that God promised protection based on the faith of King Mosiah, not of his sons. It tells us this in verse 23. Now we see that Ammon could not be slain, for the Lord had said unto Mosiah his father, "I will spare him, and it shall be unto him according to thy faith." Therefore Mosiah trusted him unto the Lord. When they saw this sword-wielding Lamanite warrior suddenly die, the crowd didn't know what to think. Some said Ammon must be the Great Spirit. Others said he was sent by the Great Spirit. Some, maybe the family members of the slain robbers or of the fallen warrior, said that he was a monster who had been sent from the Nephites to torment them. Still others said that Ammon was sent by the Great Spirit to punish them for their wickedness. The same Great Spirit who had always rescued the Nephites and destroyed so many Lamanites. And no one dared touch the bodies because they didn't want to die too. About this time, Abish came back to the king's house. She expected to find all of her neighbors converted by this miracle, but instead they were frightened and yelling at each other. Seeing this, she broke down in tears. She approached the body of the queen. I assume that the crowd shouted warnings, telling Abish not to touch the bodies or she'd die. But she leaned down and took the queen by the hand. And as soon as Abish touched the queen, she arose, stood on her feet, and cried, "Oh, blessed Jesus, who has saved me from an awful hell. Oh, blessed God, have mercy on this people." She spoke, it says, many words which were not understood, and then pulled Lamoni to his feet. And he, immediately, seeing the contention among his people, went forth and began to rebuke them and to teach them the words which he had heard from the mouth of Ammon. And as many as heard his words believed and were converted unto the Lord. But there were many among them who would not hear his words, therefore they went their way. Ammon rose, and so did the other fallen servants. They spoke to the assembled crowd, saying that their hearts had been changed, that they had no more desire to do evil. They spoke of seeing and conversing with angels. Many in the audience believed on their words and were baptized soon afterwards. Verse 36, "And thus the work of the Lord did commence among the Lamanites. Thus the Lord did begin to pour out his Spirit upon them. And we see that his arm is extended to all people who will repent and believe on his name." And that's all we have today. Next week, we'll learn about what was happening with Ammon's brothers, who had a very different experience from Ammon. Which leads us to our trivia question from today. Mosiah's sons were named Ammon, Aaron, Omner, and Himni, but it says they took others with them as well. In Alma 20 and 21, we learn the names of two other members of their group. So that's our trivia question. What were the names of the additional missionaries who joined Mosiah's sons on their mission to the Lamanites? If you haven't subscribed, click that button. Give me a thumbs up. It all helps the algorithm, and it's much appreciated. And we will see you next time.